Hey, welcome to another week of Fox on Sports. I'm Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And we are still on Bedford 105.1 in the studio on a lovely Friday, having braved the traffic on Meeting House Road to get here.
Yeah. Now the construction is really bumping up against our work space.
And it really makes me wonder, okay, next week when school is in session and everybody's back in town and there are buses going, how are the school buses going to get all over the back roads? Like, this is, this is going to be interesting.
My five-year-old made a good point the other day. She said, they're probably trying to finish this before school starts. And I thought, yeah, that would make a lot of sense.
That would make a lot of sense.
Doesn't look like it's going to happen, though.
I feel like I'm in the Truman Show, you know, like at the end when he's like driving in all the roads, every road, there's a roadblock. And he's like trying to get out because he's figured out that it's his life is the show. And he's like, he's trying to escape the set. That's really life in Bedford now. It's like the Truman Show, and we just can't escape the set. But, you know, it is what it is. So, show producer Harry Kozlowski sent us a funny story. Actually, I think Maggie might have sent me the same story. The guy in ESPN, the baseball player who, when I think he was playing AAA, I think he was playing in Vegas, he glued a baseball to his pants to make it appear as if he was hitting the crotch by a ball.
Right. The pitcher.
Yeah. Keith Comstock.
Comebacker that didn't go well.
It's funny, though, because you played independent ball. Do you remember what your card looked like when you were playing?
Yes. It was an action shot.
Okay.
Of me hitting.
Okay.
And they actually took it at a good spot where I had my full extension.
Yeah.
With both arms. So, you know, this was one of those occasions when I did not know that they were taking the picture. Unlike a lot of these cards that we were just reading about this week, where it was some sort of contrived pose that had happened a million times, and so the player started to get creative with it.
Right.
In my case, it was an action shot that I didn't even know was happening.
Right. And the action shots are fun. I don't know, and maybe that's an affiliated ball thing. I honestly don't remember even working an affiliated ball. Like, we'd do card sets, and it was more because fans wanted them. Like, you'd be even before the team was announced and before you even had a roster, and people would be sitting there calling the office, hey, do you guys have a card set yet, thinking that you were going to get prospect X and they were going to get his advanced A California League card, which would be someday worth pennies. But I mean, people like freak out about that stuff and love it. And we all have things that excite us. Some people really like baseball cards. So we never did like a full sit down card set. It was always a team photographer had a shot list and would know, okay, for player X, I don't have a shot of them, so I'm going to try to get a shot of him hitting or, you know, just standing there during BP or something, some kind of an environmental shot. And I don't know if this was your experience. This was always my experience. You'd release the card set, and what would happen next?
Somebody would get traded, released.
No, before that, complaints.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Complaints about what their picture was going to look like?
About my picture. Can you get an action shot of me? Every year, I always have the same picture. I'm just sitting there smiling. Like, so I always tried to make it. Year one, which is the Kansas City T-Bones card set that we were looking at. Somehow this falls under the broadcaster's job. Hey, you need to be the guy who puts together a card set for this is really what I need to do. And so I had my list of guys. But the funny thing, so guys always would complain, wait a second, you know, I have a shot and I'm standing here for the national anthem looking like a big rube as I show up.
Yeah, I can see why he might come in and say, you know what, can we come up with a new photo for me?
So that's DJ Johnson, who hailed from Bonner Springs, Kansas. DJ was mad because he was just standing there staring up. And then I have a catcher who really didn't see a whole lot of time for us, Hiroshi Fujimoto, who has a great action shot of a bang-bang play at the plate.
Yeah.
Where he's like,
clearly blocked the plate.
He's blocked the plate, and Fujimoto was, he probably weighed 160 if he weighed a pound. But you have things like that where sometimes you get a great shot.
I like this Eddie Pearson one. He's got his hand up, ready to high five. Looks like he's just hit a bomb.
Yeah, that's Eddie. I mean, look at the stats on the back. Like, Eddie, I think, hit 372 the year before. Like
369. Not even close.
Beast. But, and he was the MVP of the league the year before. Just a sweet human being, too.
These blurbs on the back, were you in charge of writing those?
Probably. Yeah, we had an MVP card for Eddie, too. In 2003, Eddie Pearson had a magical year. The T-Bones acquired Eddie from St. Paul on June 6th, and he got red hot with the Kansas summer. Eddie finished up hitting 369 as a member of the T-Bones while smacking 14 homers and driving in 72 runs in under 3 months. In fact, Eddie hit 404 in the month of August. So,
good stuff.
Dude could rake.
On Jack Jones's card, it notes that he was a teammate of Mark Kotze.
At Cal State Fullerton.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, it was, but I mean, that's the stuff that you get, and that's like what kids these days are missing about the Topps cards, where it's got like a trivia quiz on the back. I'm flipping through. I think these cards were given to me by somebody, but Barry Bonds, this would be a second year card. Went 4-for-5 with 3 home runs for Prince William in the Carolina League at Durham, pre-steroids. Impressive.
Yes.
So, but the other thing you get, and going back to the weird stuff that you get when guys are posing, so you get the guy who glues the baseball to his crotch thinking that this is going to be really funny. And sure enough, it was.
It was memorable.
Certainly memorable. You get the Billy Ripken card with the curse words written on the knob of the bat. So if you didn't remember Billy because he was Cal's brother and played in the major leagues, well, you're going to remember him because of the card that Harry Kozlowski has somewhere.
Yeah, he has 2 claims to fame, and those, unfortunately, are not the ones you want.
Nothing's really good, but, and then there was a 1972 Billy Martin card where he's holding the bat, but he's got his middle finger down the handle of the bat, so he's flipping off everybody who has his card when he was managing Detroit.
That would have been a good trivia question. Which manager had their baseball card look like this? He probably would have been at the top of the list.
Right. It would make sense. Then there was, I think it was in 1969, there was Aurelio Rodriguez, who instead of having himself in the card, he had a bat boy in the card. So, I mean, but like having a baseball card is supposed to be a special thing. Like, this is a momentous, I made it. Bat boy, go stand in the picture for me. Like, okay. And then some of these guys, like, I was flipping through this card set from a team that I worked for, that I broadcast over 100 games for, and I'm flipping through looking, and I go, I don't remember this guy.
Yeah.
And so I went back and looked, and there was a guy who just happened to have the perfect timing and shows up with the team as we have all the pictures together. I'm like, I need to get this guy in. I don't know anything about him. His name is Damon Mohammed. If you look at the back of the card, and this is a 2004 card, it says something about he works for the Department of Social Services for the state of Arizona. He played his college ball at Kansas. Damon last pitched professionally in 1998. That was 6 years before. And so Damon had 3 outings as a member of the T-Bones. His first outing, he lasted 1/3 of an inning and allowed 5 earned runs. So, I don't know. That makes his ERA something like 1.35, I think. And then the next time out, he had a good outing. He struck out 2 in 2 innings and lowered his ERA to 19. And then went back out and proceeded to allow 6 runs in an inning and a third. And
then he was off for another 6 years?
That was the end of Damon Mohammed's professional career. And I guess fortunately for him, nothing of this shows up on the back of a baseball card. You can find it if you dig hard enough. Opponents had 21 at-bats against him and had 10 hits. They hit .474 against him. And I don't know if you're calculating whip. His whip is somewhere around 5.
Yeah, you don't want those numbers on the back of a baseball card.
No, but he stayed. You know, he's for time immemorial for those who, for the tens of people that have a 2004 Kansas City T-Bone set, they look at the set and go, I have no idea who this guy is.
Right. Well, so, that's the thing, especially with the independent leagues, with all the transactions and why I was on 4 teams, but I was only on 1 card.
Yeah.
If you don't play a full season,
you get traded,
you get released.
It's timing.
You miss the card.
Well, and you can look, if you're looking at these cards, like some of these have nice photos and the guys were gone before the ink was dry on the cards, really. There's one, if I'm looking, you may have faced this guy somewhere, Greg Bicknell. Bicknell played, and we used to call him the Satchel Paige of the Northern League. I mean, he was a whopping 36 years old, and he won maybe 160 games in the minors and had been as high as Double A and pitched everywhere. It was like a Johnny Cash song.
Yeah. He was 02 and 03. He was pitching in China, so I didn't cross paths with him.
He was everywhere, but the shot of Bicknell you're looking at is him on the road because, hey, this guy appears that he's going to stick with the team. I'm going to grab him. And then there's Lauren Fox feeling bad that Damon Muhammad is also a new signee to the team. And I have a shot of Damon. He is a pitcher warming up on the warning track.
Oh, gosh. And not even in uniform.
Not even in uniform. I photoshopped the sign out of the back. Like, anyway, it's funny. And then the other artifact is you have our pitching coach on it, a guy who played in the major leagues who was on the team at that point, but or was with the team at that point. But as our conversation with Chris Atterbury from a couple weeks ago indicated, Danny Jackson didn't finish the season with the team because he got into a fight with our trainer, and that was that. So, but I mean, if not for the back of a baseball card, where would you have ever learned that Doc Medic was a dentist or Richie Hebner was a gravedigger in the offseason? Like,
well, the only other place would have been on your broadcasts.
Right, or the internet, but that wasn't a thing back then. So, you know, that's, I don't know, the fun of the baseball card. So, and then I probably, when I was a kid, became more of a fan because there were baseball cards. Like, you buy these things and you don't have phones and you, like, your limitation to these, to players is maybe you hear a little tiny blurb on the news or maybe you happen to catch a game because not every game was broadcast. So you're like flipping through cards trying to figure out who these guys are. But kids now get to do things like go to the Red Sox for 12 minutes.
Yeah, right, right. And, you know, the baseball card thing, it just reminded me of getting to know the players. You know, all the talk now with the NBA is how it's the sport where you can get to know the players the most because you're up close to them, you see their faces, they're not wearing a helmet, they're not wearing a hat, and you don't have that with the other sports. But that was the way with baseball. Is that's what baseball cards did for you. It allowed you to get to know the players better, and your passion for the game grows when you know everybody who's on the field.
Correct. And but think about what they cost. Like, I still remember going to, I think the grocery store was called El Rancho. It might have been a Market Basket. It might have been an El Rancho out in California. But 1980 Tops, 18 cents a pack.
And you probably got a piece of gum,
and
too.
And you got a piece of gum that was about half the size of the card. Like, I mean, for me being six or seven, like, weren't a whole lot of better things. I think I actually, oddly enough, collected hockey cards before I collected baseball cards.
That is odd in Southern California.
Yeah, and I remember having a pile of Wayne Gretzky rookie cards. I don't know where, and the basketball cards, the 79-80 ones that had three players that were perforated, and nobody tells you when you're 6 or 7 years old not to tear them apart.
Right.
And so you have the Magic and Larry Bird rookie card that then becomes three cards because you're a kid and that's what you do. Like, I could have paid for my own college with that. But yeah, baseball cards now, if you go to Target, $2.99 a pack.
Oh, gosh.
Like, that's different than 18 cents.
That
18
is a lot
cents
different.
Is like your parents flip you a quarter.
Right.
You know, and I don't know if this qualifies me, us, as old, having a conversation about in my day things were cheaper, but gas was 76 cents a gallon when I got my driver's license.
Well, that's why in one of those articles this week, it talked about how in the mid and late 80s, baseball card collecting got so popular that the cards got devalued.
Well, that ruined it.
Yeah.
It ruined it because, like, I you know, you remember being a kid and it was easy to figure out what somebody's rookie card was because it was the Topps card. And, you know, until like the early 80s when there were others that got into it. And then really kind of where it hit its peak and then really bottomed out fast was the whole Upper Deck thing, where now it became there are holograms on the cards so that you can see. I don't remember ever getting counterfeit cards ever in my life, but apparently it was a big enough problem that Upper Deck decided that we need to put the holograms on and these need to be in these sealed things. And you can't have gum in the pack because the gum might mess up the card. And then slowly the fun started to trickle away from all this stuff where, like, there was a guy who was going to be a rookie but he had his rookie card 3 years before he ever hit the major leagues, and you know, and now I don't get a now I don't get gum when I.
Yeah, those Upper Deck packages were really airtight, weren't they? Like,
oh my God,
silver, it was like impossible it was like to open.
Fort Knox. Well, then you know you get the cards and you put them right back in there, and like I can't touch this because for fear that I'm going to ruin the cards.
They're
like,
not going to be mint anymore,
and they're not going to be, and really they're not worth anything anyway. Though I couldn't tell you how many I have that are kicking around, but I mean that was kind of like when I lost interest in the whole thing.
Thanks a lot, Upper Deck.
Yeah, exactly. That how to take the fun out of everything. So, yeah.
We put the fun back in baseball yesterday, though.
We did put the fun back in baseball yesterday. So you saw the article that I sent you over, and I don't remember who it was. It might have been Hannah Kaiser on Yahoo who said it. That and Alex Cora, I think, said it too. I've never seen that many kids at a game. I said it yesterday. It was awesome.
It was, and that was. It's funny because last night after the game, as I was thinking about the day, I was thinking if I were going to write an article about this game, what would I call it? And it would be 12 minutes of baseball. That's what it was. We had 12 minutes of baseball, but there were all kinds of other things that went into it before and after the game. But it was a very unique situation. We're taping this on Friday. Yesterday was the continuation of the Red Sox Royals game from August 7th that got suspended in the top of the 10th inning with nobody out and 2-1 count. And you fast
was strange. You thought it was strange.
Like they wanted to go out there and we'll give it three more pitches and then we'll see how the weather's reacting. But after a few weeks, a lot can change. I mean, it was a very interesting scenario to have the ballpark open for the continuation of this game. And of course, nobody knew how long it might go. As it turned out, it lasted 12 minutes.
They did really well with everything. So, it turned out yesterday, too. We bought our tickets for $5, but it turned out that they were giving them away. They were having long lines at the ticket window. And in order to alleviate that, they just started printing out tickets and handing them out. And, like, I love that. The fact that you look at a situation and you're the Red Sox and you say, we just want everybody in here. Like, get out of the line. We didn't staff it right. Just print a ton of tickets and walk out and just do this. Like, make people happy. And whoever did that, like, kudos, because the worst possible situation is the game ends and you have people standing in line waiting to pay their $5. Is it really worth? Yeah, I know the money went to the Jimmy Fund, which is also awesome. They did their telethon and they raised about $3.5 million for the Jimmy Fund in that time, which is a super worthy cause and really one of those things that regardless of anything, political affiliation, you name it, everybody. You look at kids with cancer and you say, what can I do to help? And so everybody's out there, you know, the Red Sox ask and people give. But the other fun thing is they open up the gates at 11, let people walk around on the warning track from 11 to noon. Did you guys do that?
We did.
Okay.
Right. So first pitch of the continued game was set for 1:05. Like you said, they opened the gates at 11. From 11 to 12, everybody can walk around the entire warning track all the way around the park and get to have their foot on what is an amazing place.
Yeah.
The most storied ballpark in America, and get to walk up, maybe even touch the Green Monster.
Yeah.
And so what a great way to get the families and kids there early and have the chance to do that.
Well, you get them there early, but you also get them there so that hopefully you can kind of spread out the concession lines a little bit, because they were also doing dollar hot dogs, $2.75 drinks.
Dollar popcorn.
I had the conversation with Keith, another guy that joined us. I wonder if they're going to sell beer because it's after the seventh inning. Sure enough, they did sell beer. I kept seeing people walking around with Lord Hobo 617 in their hands. And I was like, wait a second, how did I miss this? But it was Aramark, the concessionaire, was able to sell beer to their own discretion. And of course, if the game ends after 12 minutes, you're not going to have a whole lot of people walking out completely sauced. You know, you're going to be fine. It's not like people had a whole lot of chances given the length of some of the lines, but they did a really good job of trying to get people through the lines. The concession employees were extremely kind and extremely patient. And, you know, just the things that you get to see that you wouldn't ordinarily get to see, like these guys probably don't remember it. I'm pointing at my kids who are in the studio with us. These guys probably don't remember it. The Red Sox used to, and I don't think they do it anymore, would have minor league games at Fenway. And they would have about the same attendance they had today. And the fun was you get to go to the ballpark and wander the ballpark and not have to deal with 40,000 people and everything that accompanies that. And so yesterday, I go running up. We're out sitting behind the Royals bullpen because Maggie wanted to do that. I go running up because I see the red seat, the Ted Williams seat. I'm like, I want to go check it out. So I go running, and this lady starts making fun of me as I'm running. You're almost there, you're almost there. And so I was like, this is no problem. Come on. And I go over and start talking to her.
Because it's a ways out there. It's not just over the bullpen.
No, it's...
I mean, he 40, destroyed that ball.
Yeah, 521 feet, 40 rows up. So I go up there, and I start talking to this lady who is as engaging as can be. And it turns out, I didn't know this when I started talking to her. She's the vice president of tours for the Red Sox. And so I'm talking, and she says, do you want me to take your picture up here in the seat? And I said, I want to go down and grab my kids, but I don't want them to lose the seat. And she says, oh, I'll send so-and-so down. So she sends this kid, Zach, down to save their seats so that they can come up and take a picture on the Ted Williams seat. I'm like, you didn't have to do that. Like, it would have been real easy to say, oh, okay. She went the extra mile. And that was really the feeling that I got yesterday, is everybody's going the extra mile. It was weird to go to a game that didn't have a national anthem.
That's right.
But you just show up, and the scoreboard is already set up. Like,
yeah, I took a panoramic when we were walking the warning track of the scoreboard, because there it was, KC Boston.
4-4.
4-4 in the 10th, and they had all that stuff that had already happened.
Yeah.
But it was 3 weeks ago.
Right, and then before the team took the field, or it might have been while they were taking the field, they ran to the soundtrack of Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, Welcome Back, My Friends, to the Show That Never Ends, and they're showing that while Dave O'Brien is filling in highlights of what went on in the game. Like, just the game production of some of that sort of stuff, you just look at and you say, all right, somebody thought through this. Like, this is clever. And then the game ends, and even if you feel bad that the game only lasted 12 minutes, all right, first of all, even for the two Kansas City Royals fans who are sitting in here, it's cool to see a walk-off. And it's cool to see a walk-off and somebody's like, ready, all right, I got to hit the button that plays Dirty Water. And okay, we hit that. You get like the full Boston walk-off experience. I think Maggie said it. This is really cool. I've never seen a walk-off before. You got a walk-off after 12 minutes.
It was awesome. I mean, the kids, you know, the course, the next thing after that great walk-off experience where you get the music, you get a lot of people cheering, so it's loud. You get Brock Holt sliding into home plate.
Yep.
As a little bonus, you know, he had the walk-off hit.
I didn't see that.
He had the walk-off hit. The Red Sox score. They're celebrating at second base. And then he, as the one who had hit it, runs from second base to home plate and slides into home plate.
Did he round third?
No, he just sort of went straight past the pitcher's mound. And so it was sort of an impromptu celebration. There was like this extra fun thing for the kids. So you've got the great walk-off experience. And then all the kids got to run the bases.
Yeah.
So as a whole, what you get for these kids is a chance to go to the game for free. They get to walk on the field before the game. They get to see a walk off. Then they get to run the bases. It's like the perfect balance between experiencing the ballpark and having fun, mixing in a little bit of baseball.
Right.
With the professionals.
There's no, I'm bored. When is this going to be
over?
There's
no time.
Well, it could be over any time.
There's no time for it.
Right.
It was just.
You sit down, it starts, and it's done. It solved the person in the Yahoo article, Hannah Kaiser, said it solves two baseball problems. More kids, great. All right. How do you do that more? How do you make it so that you have minor league baseball? We always used to do, and I will air quote it, education day. And like eye roll. I might have just sprained both of them, but it's education day where kids would go to the ballpark as a field trip. And it was always so loud. It was just like this background noise. But kids go and they get to see the game, and the Fisher Cats do a good job of it because they put in educational components in between innings. There are workbooks that the teachers can use if they're teaching high school and they're talking about physics or math, all the way to the little kids who might just be learning about physical fitness. Like there are varying levels of it. So minor league teams have done a very good job. And we used to always do it when I was with the T-Bone, speaking of that, where we would do day games, camp days, just to get kids out and bounce kids back with a coupon that's good for another game so that they walk back into the house and, hey, Mom, I got this coupon to go to the T-Bone's game. Great, let's go. We'll go again. Like, and that's what you want. You want them coming back and enjoying the game. And if they don't play, all right, how do you make it so that they do play? And how do you make it so that they do appreciate the game? Like, so yesterday did that, where it got a lot of kids the opportunity to see the game up close and personal. It wasn't really long. Like, it was a tolerable amount of time. The dollar hot dogs weren't these 12-to-1 things. I mean, they were like 6-to-1 hot dogs. They were good ballpark dogs.
They were.
And they didn't really have any time to sit in the warmer and spoil because the game started and then the game ended.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot, or at least multiple times this summer, about ways to improve the game, what's wrong with baseball, how do we make it better. How about doing this once a month?
Seriously.
Or a couple times a season where you make it the family-friendly pricing and timing.
Yep.
And you create this unique strategy of we start the game at the top of the 10th. And it's an extra inning game.
Yeah.
And we do it a couple times a year. And you go there and you get to, you know, walk on the field before the game. And then you never know how long it's going to be. So it turns into a really exciting, unique baseball experience that's perfect for the kids. Because if it only lasts an inning or two, they got their fill. They're happy.
And for the players, I mean, it basically winds up as an off day. So you do it 4 times a year. Like, it really is ideal. You have to, you could strategize that. It was interesting yesterday. So Bubba Starling batted third in the top of the 10th, and they announced, it was weird because if you're a Royals fan or follow baseball at all, you know, pinch hitting for Billy Hamilton, number 11, Bubba Starling. Well, the backstory is Billy Hamilton got DFA'd, designated for assignment.
No longer on the team. He was on the team when the game started, playing in the game.
Yeah.
But now he's not on the team anymore.
No longer there. So they DFA'd Billy Hamilton, and so they had to hit for him. We, in 2006, good old Brian Williams, our promo guy with the T-Bones, hatched this idea of playing the first 2 innings of a game on an Xbox. And this one made national promotion. Our catcher, Matt Seriani, who's in that card set, was on the Jim Rome show. Like, all of these things that go along with a promo like that. And in independent ball, we had approval to do it until Major League Baseball came in and said, you guys can't do this. You're making a mockery of the game. They have no jurisdiction over indie ball. They just came in and said no. And so we heeded their wishes. And but the questions that came in were, okay, so what happens if a player gets hurt in the video game? What happens if somebody gets ejected in the video game? What happens if a pitcher gets shelled? Well, are these stats going to count? So, I mean, all kinds of weird things that go along with it. And this was almost like that sort of came to life yesterday where, okay, this guy started the game, but he's now been released. So it was a lot of fun to be a part of the whole thing. Red Sox did a wonderful job with it. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about the Elam ending in baseball and whether that might ever work. So you're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox.
And Andrew Hansen.
And more baseball. Apparently, we're more interested in baseball than everybody else is, but...
Well, it is a Cooperstown weekend, after
it is,
all.
Yeah. Leaving a Cooperstown... You know, there are other local teams going. Maggie's going to play with an 18U in an 18U women's series. So I'm really curious to see... First of all, she gets to play on Doubleday Field, which is fun. And then they get some educational program at the Hall of Fame, which I have no idea what that is, but I'm excited to go.
It's a good place for baseball education.
Uh-huh. So, yeah. So that'll be neat. Anyway, we talk about the basketball tournament probably more than most people. And
TBT.
TBT.
It's called the basketball tournament.
Yes. I like, even though the Elam ending is a weird sort of artificial thing, I do love it for... basketball games. I don't know if I love it for like a playoff game, but I love it for hoops games in general because it makes people stay in their seats because you just don't know what you're going to see that will end the game. And it goes from we're playing against the clock, it gets rid of the fouling, and the best thing that goes along with it is there's always a game-winning shot. I almost called it a walk-off, but I guess it would be a walk-off in basketball.
It sort of is a walk-off, but why wouldn't you want it for the playoffs if you like it for the regular season?
I don't know. I have no thought of that. That was just more of the basketball purists are going to freak out if that's how the playoffs go, if that's the finals and we're using this weird thing. But then yesterday with the way that game ended and like, boom, cue the music. And all right, the Dodgers have had 12 walk-offs at home this year, by the way. The most since 1991, which was an utterly forgettable season other than I think they knocked out the Giants in the last week of the last week of the regular season before the wild card existed. But what if you could do that with baseball? You know, what would it look like? Like, do you do it? My thought yesterday, and this was like back of napkin things, was do you do it where you play six innings and then whoever's leading add two runs or three runs to it, and the inning in which a team hits that number, okay, you play the top and the bottom of the inning, and that's the end of the game. So if it's the seventh inning, Aaron Boone brought up a point of mercy rules in Major League Baseball.
Right, he did, yep.
Which is a great point because there have been a lot of games this year that just get out of hand, and rather than spoil your pitching rotation and spoil your bullpen, teams will just say, hey, here's the white flag. Here's Stevie Wilkerson. Here's Roman Quinn. Here's whoever. Go out and mop up.
Right. Like, if it's 16-3 in the sixth inning.
Cool. Position player. Go mop up. We don't care. Which I enjoy because it's fun, but from a fan who's buying tickets to the game, and it's bad. Mercy rule would be all right. The only thing that it really does that would be weird is stats. Like, now not everybody's on a level playing field. Let's say you have a guy who's chasing a home run title, and you really wanted to get the home run title in the last game of the season, they just shellack somebody, and
he doesn't get
his at-bats because the game's done in six.
So for your Elam ending, you're talking about after six innings, if you add two or three runs, so let's say the score is 5-3.
Yep.
So you just play until somebody gets to seven.
Yes. So play until somebody gets to seven or gets to eight, but it's not, if the visiting team gets there, the home team has the chance to answer.
Right.
So you regardless, okay, you could get to a point where you score your three and okay, now we're there and I have to get my closer hot in a hurry. Like there's more intrigue that goes along with it than just, hey, the game's over.
Well, here's another alternative. What if you played for 2.5 hours?
Yep.
And then whatever the score was, you get one more inning.
Yeah.
Or maybe two more innings. If it's 2.5 hours and you add two innings, then you're looking at around 3 hours.
Yep. So then, So then there becomes a premium placed. It's like I want to reach out to Elam at Ball State. I don't even know what his first name is and be like, dude, you got to be able to do some statistical analysis and figure out how this can work for baseball. Because I really think it could save the game and make it so much more watchable for so many more people whose attention spans are completely shot. But now you have this thing where every time there is the Red Sox won and they won it on this, like it was an amazing play that saved the game. Like that doesn't, you know, in Little League, you do it where it's all right. You can't start a new one after an hour and 45. Awesome. So I don't know. I like it because it fits it into you really get away from those 5 hour Red Sox Yankees marathon things. Like,
yeah, if you say play for 2.5 hours and then we're gonna play two more innings, it's not gonna be a 5 hour game.
Right, exactly. It would be the only way it is a 5 hour game is if it's tied.
Yeah, right. Extra
That's
innings.
It. But
right.
I mean,
not a 9-inning, 4.5 hour game.
It upsets the apple cart as far as strategy goes, which isn't necessarily a bad thing.
We'd get more complete games out of pitchers.
Right. There would be things that you would have to do with stats where complete games and shutouts would become less of a consideration than they currently are. Like, you know, back in the day, it was like there was a shutout pitched every day in the major leagues and a complete game shutout. Now they're like no hitters. They don't exist.
That's right.
So, I don't know. I think it's interesting and it's worth thinking about. And while the purists would scream about it because you're ruining the game, ultimately, how many tickets can the purists buy themselves?
It's a good point, because there's only a small percentage of purists.
I would consider myself a purist, but if it gets more people interested in the game, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I'd say I'm a borderline purist as well. Maybe try it where it's not every game, but once or twice a week.
Atlantic League. Let's do it.
Yep.
Everything gets tried out in the Atlantic
League. That's where they experiment.
Yep.
Robotic umpires.
Stealing first base, you know, whatever it takes. So, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It might be worth trying to see if we can get Elam on the show, whatever his name is.
Or maybe we should just stop talking about it so we can develop it off air and present it to the game.
Nick Elam. You know, we know people.
I saw him talk at the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference.
Yeah.
He did a half-hour presentation on the Elam ending. It was a really nice professional presentation. He had a lot of stats, every issue, every complaint that people had, he addressed it in a really convincing way. You would have liked it. I mean, he showed that a lot of thought had gone into it. You know, the minor tweaks that they'd made to it made sense.
There's his email address. we can get him. Why? Okay, so you would know better because you saw the presentation. Why did it's 8 points at 4 minutes?
It's seven. I believe it's seven now. It might have been eight.
Okay.
I want to say that they changed it to seven.
Okay. So it's 8 points or 7 points, 4 minutes left. You know, obviously they're doing all kinds of crazy statistical analysis on it. But, you know, there's a reason that they came up with that. And I guarantee you it's got something to do with the number of points that are scored in the last 4 minutes of a game. But, like, it really takes a lot of the – it adds something that's good and takes away things that are bad.
Yeah, and I think that's where the motivation came for it, is what you're talking about. Instead of having the parade to the free throw line, he wanted to come up with a different ending that added some drama.
Right.
So it did the things that you're talking about.
Right. In baseball, you're never going to quite have that same sort of drama that goes along with it, because there's always going to be a bottom half of an inning. If I'm doing it my way or if you're doing it your way. But the thing that it really gives you is shorter games and less of this parade of pitchers, and it makes it, regardless of whether it's your system or mine, it makes it more that a pitcher is now able to complete a game if he's truly rolling, and if his offense is rolling, great. But and it just takes away a lot of the, well, this thing's just dragging on, like, this is no fun, kids, get in the car, let's go home. Even though fireworks are after the game, we're leaving.
Well, the great thing about it for both sports is that it changes the drama. It hopefully takes away some of the negative aspects, but then it introduces a whole new level of strategy. So for the basketball one, the thing that I, you know, wrote to you about before we talked about it most recently is, when do you call timeout? Because the rule for the Elam ending in basketball is it's the first dead ball under 4 minutes. So if you have the ball with 4 minutes left, you can take a timeout. If you like where the score is and you want to set the target score now. So let's say you're up by one.
That's cool.
You're up by one with 4 minutes left. So the strategy comes into play. Do you call timeout right now? Because you're up by one.
Right.
So you know you only have to score seven.
The finish line is shorter for you.
Right. Or do you want to try and go down and score?
Right.
Now you're up three, and now the pressure's on the other team, where maybe they come down and shoot a three, and then you have the ball again. You can go up by five. And so, you know, the strategy for each team, given the score and given the time and given possession, I think that's something that a lot of research would go into, of how to play that out. And so then if you did it in baseball, certainly that's going to open up a whole new level of strategy of, when do you bring your closer in, and when do you use your best pinch hitter?
Well, if you do it my way, okay, let's say you're down by a run, and people are probably snoring, so we're going to conclude this segment shortly. But let's say you're down by a run, and you're at the end of the sixth inning, and, all right, you take the team that's ahead, and you add two to it. Do you go to your closer there and really try to limit that at that point? If you're the team that's leading, do you go to your closer now, and now you start pinch hitting guys at a point in the game that you might not, because I'm really trying to get runs now so I can get out of this game? It forces your hand so that, yeah, you might have a starting pitcher go six, but now you have to have a whole bunch of closers. And if you don't use them right, and if you can't push the runs across, like, okay, what now?
Right.
It would get good. You're talking about good, fast innings, crisp play. Defense now has a premium. Speed has a premium again. Like, it's a different game. Like, that would be fun. Like, I'm looking at Maggie. I want to put together a tournament where we put the Elam ending into play just so that we can play around with it and see what happens.
Right.
Like, I don't know. There's a lot that you can, I don't know. And somebody smarter than we are is going to figure out a way to game the system, but I don't know.
That's what rules are for. That's what game structures are for. It's to set it up, and then people study it, and then you come up with your own strategy.
Right, exactly. And then there's the undervalued thing, whether it's speed or defense or...
or power.
Power or whatever. You got to find the undervalued commodity and build your team around that before everybody else does. Case in point, 2015 Royals. Builds your team around speed and defense, and then everybody else does the same thing, and then the long ball comes in. Like, I don't know. It's could be interesting. So anyway, we want credit for it when it happens. All right. So now that we're done talking, we spent more time talking about that game yesterday than the game.
Yes, we did. 12 minutes of baseball.
And we just spent
talk about it for 45.
It wasn't on. I didn't see it on SportsCenter this morning, which was kind of a bummer, because I'm like, this is a perfect thing to talk about. But I don't know. There wasn't a whole lot of attention paid to it, possibly because it, from the standpoint of the standings, really won't matter. But
most likely not. I mean, they're still alive mathematically.
Right. The Royals are not.
No, the Royals are not. They was a reference to the Red Sox. Speaking of which, I checked the standings out, and it's an interesting distribution of wins in the AL versus the NL. In the AL, there are six teams with at least 74 wins. In the NL, there's only two.
Okay.
So it's a lot harder to make the wild card in the American League.
Right. And the other side of the coin there is you also have three horrible teams.
Thank you. That is my next point.
The Royals, the Tigers, and the Orioles, all bad.
In the American League, there are five teams with 54 wins or fewer. So there's five really bad teams.
Yeah.
If you go up to the Mariners.
Right.
In the NL, there's only two such teams. So these teams in the AL are getting to feast on those lesser teams, and that's making it a lot harder to make the wild card.
Yeah. That's kind of the thing. That's what has carried the Yankees. Like, the Yankees didn't play well against the Twins last month. Didn't play well. They just got swept by Oakland. Like, they're not a great team. But you put them against the Orioles, they're best team in baseball.
Batting practice.
Right. It's every day is Labor Day. You put that situation in play, and that's what is making the Yankees the Yankees this year.
What are they, like 18-1 against the Orioles?
They're absurd.
Something crazy?
They're absolutely absurd. So, yeah. And then, let's see, what else? Other baseball things that have been fun. The Little League World Series. This might just be the entire baseball episode, but I guess it's this time of year. Little League World Series, that has been the must-see TV to watch. How much of that have you watched?
I've watched a few innings.
Yeah,
of a few different games. So I think I've seen the left-handed hitter that you're going to talk about.
Yes, the kid for Louisiana.
Did he hit the up and away grand slam?
He hit the grand slam, left-handed hitter up it. He went oppo with it, and it was...
That was a nice swing.
Oh, yeah, just let it get deep on him and then just flipped it out of the ballpark.
And I heard that he was 3-for-3 in that game.
He was 4-for-4 in that game.
And it must have ended at that
three doubles.
At that point, he was 3-for-3.
He ended it on a double to right center. So I think now he's got 13 or 14 hits. The record, I think, is 14. So everybody seems to think that this kid's going to set the Little League World Series record. I think he was 13 for 17.
Yeah, like, he's going
to
set it.
Get hot at the right time,
if they pitch to him in the next game.
Right. Well, it'll be interesting to see that. So Virginia is done, and Louisiana will take on Hawaii. And, you know, and I'm also convinced that I could live about 100 lives, and I would never be as cool as any of the kids from Hawaii are.
I got to see a lot of their game against Virginia, and they're fun to root for, and they'd have a chance to repeat.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, they can play. They can just play. And I don't know how, like, these kids live on Maui. Like, you talk about kids who go, you know, yeah, it's a step down. It's like Tua Tagovailoa. It's a step down for Tua going from Hawaii to
Bama.
Yeah, to Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And it's a step down for these kids going from Maui to now I'm in Williamsport. Like, what happened to the ocean? Who took the ocean away?
Right.
But, yeah, they can play. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun to watch that. They do the MLB Classic on ESPN. They did that last Sunday night. But they also had players who were serving as commentators. So like Chris Archer, who just went on the DL with a bad shoulder. Archer was down there doing basically sideline reporting with these kids. And just some of these guys just really, when you watch them, it's obvious that they're just big kids. Like, Archer was doing such a good job talking to these kids. The kids are, you know, who's your favorite band? And the kid would throw something out and he'd be like, you know, now you're making me feel old. I don't even know who these guys are.
Well, and I mean, Archer was a little leaguer himself like a dozen years ago.
Yeah, he's not an old guy.
He's a young pitcher.
He's young. So, but he's one who was absolutely born to be doing that, just interacting with the kids. And it's so sweet to see. And then, you know, you look at Bryant and Anthony Rizzo sliding on the cardboard boxes down the hill. You know, multi-million dollar salary, forget it. It's, I'm here, I'm going to do this. And sure enough, they do it. So it's, you know, these guys are sitting there and enjoying the experience. And Major League Baseball, by doing this sort of thing, has really done a wonderful job of humanizing players and really giving them personalities. And you want to see more of that, you know, wherever they can possibly. And did you happen to see, they referenced this a number of times, the number one player selected, because they pull all these kids. Who's your favorite MLB player? Do you know who number one is?
Whit Merrifield.
No, you're incorrect. It's Nick Deeney.
Yeah, right.
We're throwing other Royals out. Javi Baez.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who is, his nickname is El Mago, the magician. And MLB is doing a good job of promoting him because...
Wait, they didn't leave it up to him to promote himself?
No, they didn't make him promote himself. Oh, he's on commercials constantly talking about MLB and talking about what he does. And when you watch him in slow motion, whether it's he's sliding and somehow in full speed, eluding a slide, lifting his arm and then popping it right down on the base, the plays that he's able to make, like the sense of balance he must have, the equilibrium he must have to spin fully and still make a good throw. To me, he's not a magician. He's a witch. Like, he's just otherworldly when you watch this guy. And this is a byproduct of it's this generation having watched other players on TV and the ESPN top 10, probably from the time that they were in diapers, and watching guys and going out to the field and saying, how can I do that?
Right.
How can I learn how to do that too? And now these guys are older and they can do it. It's insane.
And he lets it rip when he's hitting. Baez.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't get cheated.
No, he does not get cheated. But the reason I said Whit Merrifield is because in that Hawaii-Virginia game that I saw, one of the Virginia batters, they put up the fun facts about him, and they said his favorite player was Whit Merrifield.
Yeah.
And that really surprised me. I'm like, how does this kid from Virginia, how is Whit Merrifield his favorite player?
Whit is from the South, but he went to the University of South Carolina.
Yeah, I tried to look it up a little bit.
He went to the other USC.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I guess at least he values getting on base and having a good batting average. And so then, you know, it was fun to see Whit yesterday at the Royals-Red Sox game, but unfortunately he was on deck when the Royals made their third out in the top of the 10th inning, so he didn't get to bat.
Right. So, good ball player. led the American League in hits last year. I mean, it's just like weird.
And was it batting average too?
I don't think. What did he hit? He hit 304 last year, led it in steals, 45 steals.
Okay.
So, like, anywhere else, if this guy played in Boston, he'd be bigger than Pedroia.
Right.
Be the MVP of the league. Instead, he's languishing in Kansas City, although he's got a super team-friendly contract. Like, I think he's 4-16, something like that.
That's how the Royals have to do it.
They kept him. They didn't deal him. So they got to have something up their sleeve. There must be something they know that the rest of the world doesn't. So, I don't know. It's not like... The other thing that baseball has really had going for it this year is the guys who've come up, whether it's Vlad Guerrero, Bo Bichette, Will Smith with the Dodgers, Aquino for the Reds. Like, these guys that are coming up can play. And, you know, the Reds, of course, trade Puig to the Indians. Aquino comes up wearing Puig's jersey, wearing 66, and then proceeds to set records for the most home runs in the first 11 games of his career. Like, but, and then Puig went to a, I don't know if you saw this, Puig went to a camp for kids. I think they were playing, they may have been playing in New York City, and somebody, he went to a camp for sick kids that was nowhere near New York City. I think it was up in the Catskills, and spent some time up there. And the pictures coming out of that, you look and you say, this is a guy who has a reputation of, for kind of being silly on the field and not being a me guy, not a team guy. And you look at him with these kids when he's at the hospital or the camp with the kids, and he is in his element. And so people can say what they want. Puig has always been, to me, he plays the game the right way. He plays it with passion. He plays like every game is going to be his last. And sometimes that passion sort of spills over a little bit.
Right. He gets passionate. He gets into some altercations, right? He's just one of those competitors who's different on the field than off.
Yeah. And so the more of that, you know, the more that we can see those guys in a human setting, the better off that the game will ultimately be. Why did you send me this article about when stadiums open up?
Well, that's the thing I got to thinking about with this experience that the kids had yesterday, getting to be on the field, around the field, before and after the game. I mean, one of the things I liked best as a kid was getting to go in and watch batting practice.
Absolutely.
And they keep moving the times up. And most stadiums now, it's 90 minutes is the limit. That's when they open the gates. You get in. You probably don't see the home team take batting practice.
Right.
So the guys you want to see that you follow, you don't even get to see them take BP.
Right.
You know, maybe you get to see the visitors hit. But that's one of the best times for kids to be in the stadium. You know, you mentioned being able to kind of navigate the park a little bit, move around
yep.
when it's not completely filled, and maybe get a home run ball. I mean, you know, that's how Maggie got a ball at the game yesterday, right? You get there early. You know, if you have the gear on of the visiting team, that might...
and you're sitting over the bullpen.
That'll prompt them to toss you a ball.
Yep.
I still remember it in Fenway Park. I had on a Kansas sweatshirt, and Hal McCray threw me a ball.
Seriously?
Yeah.
There you go.
And that's what happens. That's what gets kids to love the game and keep coming back.
Yeah.
And so I found this website where they list at each ballpark in Major League Baseball, how early do they open the gates? And there are actually three stadiums that open 2.5 hours before every game. The Nationals, the Padres, and the Mariners. So there you can go in that city, and every day you can watch both teams take their full batting practice.
Right.
They should do that at every park.
I wouldn't even, if you gave me the chance to watch full batting practice and have a couple of stone IPAs at Petco, I don't even need to watch the game. I'll just kick my feet up on the top of the dugout, and you can kick me out when the game starts.
Well, that's the thing.
I'm good.
That'll help the flow at the ballpark, because you get the people who want to study the hitters coming in early, focusing on batting practice. Maybe they leave after five innings because they've had their fill.
Right.
Other people, if they want to show up late, they want to stay till the end of the game, they're working, they can't get there early, fine. So everybody wins. Everybody's happy.
I don't even need to study the hitters. It's just the sound of, like, and I was lucky when I was a kid because my sister was working for the Dodgers, and there were a lot of times I'd go up there Friday night for the game, and I'd leave Sunday night after the game, which meant Saturday and Sunday I had run of the ballpark, and I could do whatever I wanted. And you're in there during BP and nobody else is in there but out of the pavilion in LA, which for those who watch, like, that's in left and right field. Those are where the seats are, where they have, like, the palm trees are behind it. But the sound of the ball when there's nobody in the ballpark rocketing off the wooden planks of the pavilion, like, that's, you know, fans should be able to enjoy that sort of stuff and appreciate that and appreciate the fact that you're not shoulder to shoulder with everybody. Like yesterday, we were jammed up trying to get out there for Kids Around the Bases just because there were so many kids. But the attendance they had at the game, 16,000, but half of them were kids.
Yeah, and I was thinking, you know, this is what's amazing is that we've got 16,000 fans here. If you go to when Red Sox play in Tampa, there might be 10,000.
Right.
And sure enough, in that article you sent over, that attendance number was higher than the attendance number of Red Sox games this year that they played in Tampa, in Oakland,
Baltimore,
and in Baltimore.
Yep. Yeah. It's you open up the gates and you make it fun and you create people that will want to come back. Like, and if the when teams and we had Mike Ramshaw on a few weeks ago with the Fisher Cats, you talk to Ram and he is focused. And I brought this up. I emailed a lady with the Red Sox that we met yesterday. You always have to remember when you're working at a stadium and when you're playing that this might be somebody's first game. Like, they may never have gone to a game before, but this is their first. So how do you make it so that you can create the experience for them? And
well, it was our kids' first game at Fenway.
These two are fortunate because they've gone. Not a lot, but they've gone. But it was obvious that the Red Sox yesterday, somebody had that conversation where these are people that might not go to a game. These are kids that might not go to a game. How do we turn them into fans? That's it. And so for the rest of the world, whether it's Baltimore or Toronto or Tampa or whatever, if you're in the doldrums of the season and it's September, it's, yeah, you might get a few calls from season ticket holders to go, why are you opening up the gates for free, blah, whatever. You're going to, the amount of goodwill that you're going to get out of that, the amount of people that you're going to get who say, I'm a fan now, is way better than the small percentage of people that you're going to offend. And it's way better, you know, going back to the endings of the games, the number of people that you're going to bring under your umbrella is way better than the number of people that you're going to offend by changing the game. They're probably still going to be there. It's how do you make it so that the game is as accessible as it can be for as many people as it can be? And it's things like that, that, you know, whether it's a free day or shortening the length of the game or whatever, but just it needs to be fun. You need to give people a reason to come back.
Amen to that.
So, all right. Well, hopefully we haven't turned you guys off too much baseball. Thank you to our staff here for everything that, not our staff, Harry Kozlowski, Bill Jennings, Colin Richardson, the staff for just generally being awesome. Thanks to my co-host, Andrew Hansen, for coming to the ballpark and hanging out yesterday. And yeah, thanks to you for listening. Hopefully somebody's listening and will incorporate our lousy ideas or make them better. Like, you know, hey, diamond was once a lump of coal.
There may be some preseason football on next week, too.
There's preseason football. There may be, what else? High school sports season will start. So
that's
we can start
mean.
Interviewing coaches.
Yes.
And getting into the thick of things. So that being said, have a great sports week. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.